All right, guys, welcome to another edition of the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. My name is Brad Howard, and it's Friday again, so you know what that means. We've got another lifestyle-oriented thing for you, and today I got a very special guest. It's my buddy Alex Allman, and if you've been listening to us for a little while or and looking at the blog, you know that I let Alex, you know, basically just post stuff whenever he wants to because the stuff is really good and you guys like it. So we're going to dig a little deeper on some of the stuff he's got. I hope you enjoy it. Alex, man, I appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Brad. Pleasure to be here.
Not a problem, man. So, all right, so tell me something. You've got a couple of things that you really like hammering home, I guess you could say. And one of the things that you really started really keying in on over the last probably 6 months is helping guys, you know, live with, you know, a sense of passion, integrity, and just on a different level. Kind of go into that a little bit because I think that I think it's important, number one. And I know you've touched on it in a couple of blog posts, but I think, you know, coming from your mouth, it's going to sound a lot better than mine.
Well, you know, this all started for me with teaching about sex. Uh-huh. And sex advice is an interesting thing for men. There's the stuff that they think they need, and there's the stuff they really need. I guess that's true of so many things. But most guys think, you know, if I could just find her G-spot, it would all be good. I'd be able to give her all these incredible orgasms. And women aren't wired that way. They're not wired the same way we are. Like, for us, a really good blowjob might have nothing to do with things like connection or passion. But for women, it's a bit different. And that led me into other circles of getting in touch with masculinity and male passion and beginning to understand, you know, is an interesting story that I should tell. A friend of mine does dating coaching, dating advice, and he takes men out around town and teaches them how to talk to women and be smooth with women. One of the things that he does, he takes them shopping. And so these guys are generally unconfident sexually and around women, and he takes them some shop, and they go inside. And as an experiment one time, he said, you know, I'm curious, what do you think is cool in here? You know, before I give you the makeover, what do you think is cool? And the guy would walk right over to the coolest thing in the place, the shirt that most women would say, wow, that's hot. And he would put his hand on it. And it was weird. And he was saying, well, it's so strange. These guys know what cool is. They're choosing to dress like Waldo. They know what cool is. And it happened over and over again. What he realized is that we have a sense of identity in ourselves, who we think we are. And we feel like, well, if that's who I am, that's who I have to be. Like personality was given to us by God or at birth or something like that. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's complete bullshit. When you really dig into it, you realize that the personality guy who you think you are, it was just an accident. It's just something you did by default. But you could be somebody else anytime you want to. And what's critical about this isn't that you shouldn't like who you are or any weirdness like that. What's critical about this is understanding that most people have certain desires and wishes about the way their life looked and the way it ran and what happened to them. There are certain that they want. So when you want something, you think, well, I'm going to need to do the work to get that. That's generally not the case. Generally, if you want a change in your life, you just have to be the person that gets that thing. And if you look at what you have in your life, that's because of who you are. You're the person that gets what you have. And if you want something else, you need to become the person that gets that other thing. And that includes things like being better in bed. It includes things like making more money. And it includes things like having a more satisfying life, feeling like I'm making a difference here, like I'm really pulling something huge out of my life and bringing it into existence. And whether you do that or not is just a choice. It's just a choice. Well, we have this cage around us that says, oh, I wouldn't wear that cool shirt. That wouldn't be me. But when we do that, when we have this weird little belief, we're actually building a cage ourselves. It's nobody else is doing it to you. You're doing it. You're the one doing it.
Damn. Yeah, that's crazy because I've seen that myself. I've seen that in other people. You know, before, you feel like a lot of people think that you're born into a certain life and that you know, this is who you are, and you know, as an overall construct that you just don't change, and then changing this thing is going to be difficult, and for most people, it just seems to be more of a mindset, if anything, don't you think?
there is a difficulty to it, but it's not the kind of difficulty that men expect. I think that they think, I know I did, I know I've been through this process, and I know many other people have been through this process, where you believe that change is something that's hard and takes practice. And it's actually not the case at all. It doesn't require much in the way of practice, and it's not hard at all. What it is scary. Mm-hmm. What it takes is courage. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, you don't force yourself to be a different man, a better man, a more passionate man, a more competitive man. You don't force these things. What you do is you surrender to them. And it's kind of like hanging from a bar with a blindfold on and not knowing if you're 1,000 feet off the ground or if the ground's only an inch beneath your toes. And you just don't know. You know, you've got this blindfold on. Because who would I be if I wasn't me? Who would mm-hmm. I be? What if I was humiliated? What if everybody made fun of me? I mean, these things go through our heads. What if my friends didn't accept me this way? What if I tried to do this and then failed? Isn't it better to just say, well, I could do that if I want, but to actually try it is to find out whether or not you're going to succeed. So you're sitting there hanging on to this bar, and if you've ever done a dead hang, I remember doing them in high school. Mm-hmm. Gym teacher actually bet me $10 that I couldn't do it for 60 seconds, and he won, which pissed me off. It sounded like 60 seconds would be easy. But I think I was in seventh grade, and I just didn't have the grip. But it's like doing a dead hang. You know, you're hanging on, and you feel like your grip is slowly loosening and loosening. And it's scary if you're blindfolded, and you don't know whether you're at the edge of a cliff, and you're going to fall to an untimely and squishy death, or if you're just going to, you know, drop onto hard ground and then, you know, be in a better place. And the letting go is scary. It's not hard. It's easier. It's easier than living in a stupid cage that we live in. And, you know, if in my case where I started all this in relationship and sexuality, to take this kind of leap of faith in a relationship with your wife, your girlfriend, even if you're just dating women, it's a scary thing because you don't know if you're going to be accepted as the better man. And, of course, the beautiful thing that happens, I shouldn't say of course, but I've studied this extensively, and I've put so many hundreds of men through this program now. And what happens on the other side is not only are you accepted, but you earn her attraction all over again. It's like this sense of incredible response that women have for a man who's authentic enough to just have the courage to face his fear and do this kind of thing. It leads to an incredible sexual connection, an incredible emotional connection, and it gives her permission to be her best self,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool because you end up with, I mean, if you're in a relationship, you know how it's so easy to trigger each other, to push each other's buttons, and it's so easy to be small with each other. You're smaller sometimes with your lover. In this way, as a kid, you are with your parents. You're smaller with them than you are with your friends. You're more likely to lie to them. You have less integrity. You're not as cool. And that's the way we get in our romantic relationships, too. We're playing small, and she's doing the same thing. And when mm-hmm. you give her permission to be more sexual, to be more passionate, to explore the things that she's ashamed to admit to you that she would love to do, and it's all bound up in that. I mean, we're kind of dancing around the subject of sex, and we could talk directly to it, but it turns out that talking, I mean, you know, a lot of my stuff is all about how to find the G-spot or the best way to stimulate a woman's clitoris. I mean, it's right in there. It's very specific. And I teach all that stuff because I think men want to hear it, and it's important. I think you need to know the basic framework and the tools. But this is actually, you know, we're starting at the end here. This is the big stuff. This is the stuff that really makes a difference and changes your whole life, mm-hmm. changes the way you approach sexuality and approach women.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I can just think of just different times that I've felt myself just in life where, you know, when you're not being authentic and you're not actually trying things and kind of putting yourself out there, and then it's almost like you're not giving her, it's kind of a bad thing, way to look at it, but permission. You're not giving her permission to do the same thing to you. Because I firmly feel like you actually train people to treat you the way they treat you, and kind of vice versa. And like I say, it might not be the most accurate way to look at it, but for me, that's just kind of the way I look at it. And if you're, it's kind of like lying, I guess you could say. I've always said that lying is a two-way street, or if you want somebody to tell you the truth, it's a two-way street. Number one, that person has to have some sort of integrity enough to tell you the truth. And number two, you have to be the person that actually allows people to tell you the truth. Because, you know, there's a thing there. I mean, nobody's going to ever tell you the truth if all you do is just blow up on them and go crazy every time you hear something bad. So I think this is along the same lines.
Yeah, and I'll take it one step further because I think you're dead on. You're absolutely dead on. And the next step is to lead by example. To use the example of truth-telling, you know, we could broaden the discussion, but just to use the example of telling the truth. Of course, you know, we want the woman in our life to be honest with us. We want her to tell us the truth. But we would never tell her the truth. We would never do it. We would never do it. And it's the same in terms of passion in bed. I mean, we want her to admit her dirty fancies to us, but we don't admit ours to her most of the time, particularly because, you know, we think they're going to be weird or troubling or even unethical sounding. You know, if you have a fantasy about a teenage cheerleader, you know, that's not societally acceptable. And you take an enormous risk, an enormous act of courage to say, I want to play high school quarterback and I want you to play high school cheerleader. And that sounds vaguely illegal, you know. But within the realm of fantasy, which is just an area of truth-telling, an area of being authentic, you can see that she's unlikely to say, you know, I had this fantasy about being raped. And, you know, women do. Now, you have to understand that there are men who look at a high school cheerleader and they go, wow, that's hot. But they would never act on that. I mean, you go to jail for that. And frankly, it would mess with their head. You don't want to ruin somebody else's life. You know, you just wouldn't do it. It's just, you never do it. But that doesn't mean you wouldn't fantasize about it. So women may fantasize about being held down and taken by force. That doesn't mean they want it to happen. They absolutely do not want it to happen. But in the realm of fantasy, it may be something that comes up for her. Could she admit that to you? Could she admit that to you without you going, what kind of fucking freak are you? Okay. Words. Was that freak?
I don't care. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. What kind of freak are you?
Yeah.
So leading, and it's the same thing. Of course, there are plenty of things that you don't tell her that you think all day long because, you know, it would be weird. So if she came in while you were surfing internet porn, said, what are you doing? You say, oh, I'm on the iTunes library, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're not telling her the truth all day long. But when a woman walks in, she says, what are you doing? And you say, oh, you caught me. I'm a little bit embarrassed here, but I was surfing the porn. I know you don't like that, and maybe you do like that or whatever it is. But to just be able to be authentic about those things that you are ashamed of gives her permission to do the same.
Yeah.
So it's not just that you don't blow up when she tells the truth. It's leading by example. It's the willingness to face her possible blow-ups and to just absorb them and say, well, it's true. This is really who I am. It is my reality. And, you know, you can accept me or not, but you know, most men would have lied to you just now. I'm just trying to give you the truth. And it's the same with your friends. It's the same with
everybody. Yeah. You there? Did you fall off?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah. All of a sudden it sounded like you just fell off. No, it's fine. No, I agree. And, you know, you touched on something that that is really, really, really crazy, talking about the women fantasizing about the rape and things like that. And if you're listening right now, you might think that's a little strange, but I've actually read something somewhere where, and again, like I say, we're just putting this out here. I mean, you can believe it or not, but that there are certain rape victims that actually have orgasms during the intercourse or whatever, and that is, it's like they almost feel betrayed by their body or something like that. And like I said, I'm not very sure exactly how it goes, but there's something like that.
So, we're treading into some kind of troubling territory. So
just to
set the record as straight as it can be set. Yeah, it's extremely, extremely common for a woman to have an orgasm during rape. And that is part of why it's so traumatic. It's part of why it screws them up in the head. The reason it's so troubling is that there is a twisted potential for somebody who hears this to say she had an orgasm equals she enjoyed it. And this is a very, very wrong conclusion and a very dangerous conclusion, obviously, because, you know, no does mean no, and Obviously, anytime you force your will on another person and force them to do something they don't want to do, you're not just breaking the law, you are doing something against the humanist nature of what is right and wrong. And I have to say, it's very, very difficult in this life to figure out anything that's truly right and wrong and not just a matter of custom and culture. There are plenty of cultures where, you know, if a woman walks out showing her face, she's, you know, a whore, she's done something terrible. And of course, in our culture, if a woman goes to the beach with her bikini top off, she'll get written up on a ticket. I live in LA on the beach, and a European woman comes out here, takes her top off, she's getting a ticket, and she'll be admonished by the police. Which they think is, so there's obviously levels and levels of decency, but any time that you take from somebody else, any time in order to get what you want, you hurt another person, I think that we can say that's unambiguously evil and wrong. So I just want to be clear between the difference between rape fantasy and a woman having an orgasm and all this stuff and what's just clearly something that should never be done.
Mm-hmm.
Within that realm, yeah, that this is a pretty common situation.
Yeah, it's, like I say, I mean, that's the whole thing about this podcast and even on the fitness side, we kind of go through different things that, you know, people maybe have never heard or maybe have heard, and we try to intercept things, and at least I do anyway, or at least kind of get into the mind of what somebody's thinking as they're listening, and that's why I brought that up, because I could kind of see that maybe creeping up, so I kind of wanted to nip that one in the bud. But what we really did right there is we kind of went down the path and started with kind of the biggest thing, and you dropped it right then, and you probably want to go into this a little more often or a little bit more, because this kind of ties in exactly to what you talk about with, you know, living your life as, you know, being, you know, an authentic man with passion and things like this, is that you talked about the take, and, you know, you see that so much that it seems like everybody now is always on the take. And it's like, give me what's mine. And that's, you know, it's almost like an unearned, lottery style way of getting things, from career advancement to, relationships to things like that. And I think it'd probably be appropriate maybe to expand on that a little bit more from your perspective.
Well, I think there's a change coming, and it's interesting. You and I both apply our work and our mission in life right on the internet. So, you know, you could be a personal trainer in a gym, or you teach men one-on-one in some kind of a coaching setting, but you're achieving your goals, hitting a large audience on the internet. It's the same thing for me. I teach this sex advice. I could be doing couples therapy or that kind of thing, dealing with men one-on-one, but I've chosen to put material out there to reach the largest number of men. I think I have something important to say. I feel like this is my mission in life, and I want to put it out there to as many people as possible, so I'm on the internet. And one of the things that I know you're aware of is that the internet has changed the way we do business, because the market is not scarce. There's a billion people on the internet. There's no, you'll never run out of the potential customer, the potential business partner, the potential person who you can add value to their life and can add value to yours. And it's changed things radically, because if you own a store that sells, I don't know, bread, you're a baker, and a bakery opens up across the street, and you are in a small town, you're gonna be in a competitive situation, because you're splitting the market. Because there was a day when the bakery you would go to was the one you could walk to. So if there are two in walking distance, you just split the money. Mm-hmm. But on the internet, it's just completely different. Everybody cooperates. So if I'm a bakery on the internet and I ship bread to people, and you're a bakery on the internet and you ship bread to people, it makes a lot of sense for us to actually tell other people about this other baker. It's like, you know, I make a great cherry pie, but you really need to taste this guy's croissants, because he's the best at that.
Right.
Because people that buy from a bakery are likely to buy from another bakery. And so this idea of give me, give me, give me, and compete, 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 I think is really changing. I think it's fundamentally changing, because the internet business has changed the psychology of the culture. And I'm just seeing it more and more. I'm really seeing this thing that Zig Ziglar, the famous sales guy who did all that motivational stuff, says he was like the first guy to do that, I think. And he said, if you help enough other people get exactly what they want, you'll get exactly what you want. It's just been, to my mind, true, And I think more and more, there's another expression in business that says pigs get slaughtered.
Mm-hmm.
I've been finding in my reality that this is more and more the truth of the world we live in.
Yeah. I mean, it's, well, for one thing, when you talk about fundamentally, especially with the internet and things like that, I mean, you know, when people speak of integrity, it's basically saying, you know, integrity is doing what you would do with nobody watching, basically. So, I mean, if somebody's watching, then you do the same thing as if nobody was, you know what I'm saying? If nobody's watching, you would do the same thing as if somebody was watching. But here's the funny thing about it nowadays is that with camera phones and video phones and people being able to upload stuff like on in the blink of an eye, with the internet being able to tell, you know, talk trash about you if people want to, and things like that. I mean, it's almost like the fundamental shift isn't necessarily just kind of naturally happened. It's almost like it's being forced to happen because it's reality. I mean, it's like now, perfect example. I mean, you and I, we go to conferences and stuff like that, and I, whenever cameras come out and stuff like that, I tend to shy away from a lot of them, to be quite honest, because, you know, you just don't know sometimes who that person you're taking a picture with that you vaguely know might come around and bite you in the ass. I know it sounds like simplicity or kind of a simplistic view, but it kind of goes into that regard as well. So, I don't know.
I'm certain you're right. And part of the reason I'm so certain you're right is because to really broaden our idea of what integrity is, you would have to, I accept this, this concept. There's a guy named Werner Erhard, who said that humans are essentially creatures with no integrity. Essentially, humans are unintegrous creatures. We don't really have integrity. We try and we say we value it, but we're incredibly hypocritical about it. It's very, very difficult to have authentic integrity. And if you really challenge yourself to look at all the things that you do and all the thoughts you have, you realize how really true that is. So anytime you're caught on camera and whatever, things, of course, they can be twisted. It's not, it doesn't take much twisting to expose the things that we do. I'll include myself in that.
Mm-hmm.
Werner Erhard said the one time that humans come closest to integrity, the closest thing that we can do in terms of integrity, is when we're talking to somebody else and we admit to them a time when we lacked integrity, when we're truth-telling about that. We say, you know, yeah, my wife looked me right in the eye, and she asked me, and I lied to her. And even better if we tell her that. You know, honey, you, like, in that moment, that's as close as we could get to integrity. We're probably doing it for some ulterior motive even then.
Mm-hmm.
That we're just basically, we don't have a whole lot of integrity. So when I look at this, I try and redefine it a little bit and just say that integrity is maybe not just about being the most truthful and most honest. I think it's a great goal, but it's enormously difficult to perfect, maybe impossible. But to really understand how much of the world around us is a big lie, and how much of that big lie we invented ourselves, and have built a cage around ourselves. And every time you say things like, oh, I have integrity because I did this, or every time you say, I don't have enough integrity, that's why I'm going to lie. I mean, every time you make any kind of, it's this or that, it's A or B, it's right or wrong, it's yes or no, it's light or dark, it's good, it's bad, anytime you create that kind of duality, it's just an excuse to live without total freedom. Mm-hmm. It's when you realize that all that stuff is bullshit, that you really uncage yourself. And I feel like I'm getting so esoteric on this podcast. I really should have gone with the how to stimulate the clitoris stuff.
Oh, we'll get to that. But no,
I got so big. This is the meat and potatoes. This is the best part. You know?
Yeah. And it's true, man. It's so funny. And you touched on something, and you kind of went on a kind of a broad note. But, you know, the funny thing about it is that, you know, talking about just integrity in general, a lot of people are talking about it in the scope of integrity within the context of kind of social integrity or interactions with other people. But what's even deeper, and what one of your big things is, and I'm sure you're going to touch on, especially when you talk about self-trust, is almost that kind of like that personal integrity within yourself, like to be able to be honest with yourself about things, because people don't do it. Like, I mean, I've done it before, but plenty of times where, you know, maybe you're slapping stuff on a credit card or whatever, and you know, you're like, oh, I'll pay it back this month. But you know deep down you ain't paying it back this month. It might not get paid back for 6 months. You know what I mean? And it's like, or even when it comes to like diet and fitness and things like that.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, I mean, you have plenty of experience in this too. I mean, you know, with Andrea and stuff. But you know, it's really funny because, you know, even the chips commercial, they say, nobody can eat just one. It's the same thing where somebody says, man, I'm just going to have one beer, or I'm going to have one chicken wing, or and that's it. You know, and you put that on, but then that's not what happens. They know. Like, I know. I don't even fool myself anymore. Like, if I'm going out to the bar and I just don't even put the limitation on myself that, you know, unless I just have something incredibly important to do the next day, then there's something there that I know that will kind of be in the way of me just doing whatever I want to do. But I don't go, yeah, I'm just going to go have three beers. You know, I just know now that I'm not even going to tell myself that, because I know that's a lie. You know, I'm going to see somebody I haven't seen in 15 years. It happens every time. I'll see somebody I haven't seen in a while. We get talking or whatever, and next thing you know, I'm taking a cab home. You know, so.
But yeah, it's very, very difficult to keep commitments to ourselves.
Yeah.
Wyatt Wood Small, who is, you know, one of the great wise thinkers, but, book called People, Pattern, Power. Why Wood Small really, really gets this stuff. And he said, and I'm even going to do an impression of Wyatt, he said, how is it possible that there's something that you want to do, you have the ability to do it, and yet you don't do it? you want to do it. It's something that you want to accomplish. You want to sit down and write that novel or not eat sugar for a month or whatever it is, commitment you've made yourself. You want to do it. It's within your ability. You could do it, and yet you don't do it. And how is that possible? And he goes on to say, well, it's because there's another part of you in there that doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And that part's in charge.
Yeah.
That part's in charge. And the crazy truth is that part that's in charge is not our thinking brain. It's not, rationally we think, no, I definitely, you know, want this. There's a subconscious piece of you that doesn't have a lot of dialogue with you that disagrees, and much of the time is actually steering the ship.
Yeah, makes sense. What's that saying our buddy Evan, aka David D'Angelo, says? He says that, you know, how guys, not only guys, but people make decisions is that, and you know this a lot better than I do, but basically there's a decision that's made unconsciously, and then the decision's handed down and to, you know, the logical part of your brain, and basically it says something like, you know, hey, we've made the decision, now I need you to wrap some logic around this thing so that I can convince myself that I'm not crazy.
Exactly. And in fact, it's funny because that's another thing that Wyatt Wood Small talks about. He says, there's five reasons that people do something. If you're making a decision as to whether to do something or not do something, you're going to do it because it looks right, because it feels right, because it sounds right, or because it makes sense. But the reality is only about 5% of decisions are ever made on the basis of it makes sense. We make decisions based on it looks right, feels right, sounds right. And then, after we've made the decision based on that, we make it make sense. We rationalize it later. And this was something that Gurdjieff was talking about at the turn of the century, turn of the last century, actually. And what's so fascinating about it is that neuroscience has backed it up. They now can do a study. They've figured out where decision is made in the brain. And it turns out that when they give people a series of decisions to make, would you like this hot fudge sundae, whatever it is, they put people in these test situations with all the PET scan equipment hooked up to their brain. Mm-hmm. What they've discovered is you generally make the decision a full 8 seconds before you know you've made the decision. And what happens in that intervening time is hyperactivity in the frontal cortex as you try and make it make sense. So there's a place in the brain where the decision is made. 8 seconds go by where you're still thinking about whether or not you should do it, and then you say, yeah, I'll have that hot fudge sundae after all. How often do I get a chance to have a sundae? And, you know, even though I'm on a diet, what the hell, right? But before you articulate to the doctor who's administering the test what your decision is, before you yourself are aware you've made a decision, you've already made it 8 seconds earlier. And they've shown it in studies. It's just true. That's what's crazy about it. Yeah. It's real.
That makes a lot of sense. And one other thing John says, and just kind of looking at just from a weight loss perspective, we'll kind of go down this direction because I think a lot of people can really relate to it. He says the biggest hindrance to weight loss isn't workouts or anything like that. The biggest thing to weight loss, 90% of it, is social environment, and just that whole just your life. And what happens because you interact with people and things like that. And you know, that one instance where, you know, because you're going out to dinner and having the big meeting with the big boss or whatever, and they bring out the dessert or whatever, and you don't want to look like the guy that says, no, I'm on a diet, so you don't, you know, or something. What tends to happen is everything just kind of comes up, and you just kind of, you're still going with the flow because you don't want to look like you're not cool, for lack of a better term. And it's really interesting that you know, he's, like I said, looked at a lot of research and stuff like that, and mm-hmm. it's really just more social conditioning than anything else. It's nothing necessarily physical per se, and it's not even necessarily mental per se, as it is just how your life is being interweaved and things like that, and actually being cognizant enough each step of the way where something comes across. Because most people eat mindlessly and things like that, and it just so happens that they do this when they're around other people as well. And it's just being, you know, cognizant enough to know that you're eating every step of the way and what to do with it. So it's really, and I'm sure it rolls right into that whole thing, just that whole thing you were just talking about. So that's really interesting. So let's change directions a little bit, because I think that we've kind of laid a good foundation for, you know, integrity, self-trust, you know, stuff like that. And you know, let's get into some of the other things that you teach as far as, you know, sex. Because I know guys are interested into it, and you know, and that's why I know guys get in better shape, because they want to, you know, be better lovers and things like that and be able to do different things. What's confidence have to do with this whole thing? And how do guys just develop this overwhelming confidence in themselves, you know, in bed, so that you know where I'm going with it?
Confidence is a two-way street. If you do something because you believe it's going to work, and then it does work, and you get that external validation from it, then you're more confident the next time you do it. And so you're going to do a better job. There's obviously endless studies that show if you are optimistic and you believe that you will succeed, that you have a much, much higher chance of succeeding in any endeavor. And so that then loops back in on itself. So the more confident you are, the better you do. The better you do, the more positive feedback you get, which makes you more confident. And it spirals up. And, of course, it could spiral down just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to sex, and sex is just a fantastic example and a fantastic leverage point for improving your life, because ultimately, if you're a spiritual person, and I've recently become a much more spiritual person, if you're a spiritual person, you believe that you're this energetic, wonderful creature, and you've got a soul and all that. That's all well and good, but you're still wrapped in a monkey suit. I mean, one way or the other, we're also animals. I mean, we are ultimately a primate, and we are driven by the same things that drive other primates. And, of course, survival and replication are the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest drives we have in our lives are not getting killed, and it's real easy. I mean, everybody knows how powerful that survival instinct is, you know, when you're standing at the edge of a building and you lean over and you have that sense of, I don't know if I'm going to die right now, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's like, survival is big, and it turns out that the other big one, maybe is almost as big, is this desire to have sex and to have good sex and a lot of sex, usually with a lot of sex partners as part of that equation, but we won't go into that right now. Well, because I think there's a lot of validity to maintaining one sex partner, and
sure.
I think there's an enormous value in monogamy, but that's a whole separate subject because
sure.
There's also nothing wrong with playing the field. But sex in general and our ability to attract sexual partners and our ability to please sexual partners is a huge factor in our overall confidence in life. It affects everything else. By the way, one of the other ones is making money. It really affects your confidence on a very deep level if you're very good at making money. And the reason is because it's a survival skill.
Mm-hmm.
It's represented in our world as people that have money can live easily and can help you live. I can aid your survival when you can't pay your rent. So mm-hmm. there's a tremendous amount of power and confidence that comes with being a good earner, and there's a tremendous amount of power and confidence that comes with being good sexually, good in the sack.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these things are really highly connected. And what we know about everything in life is that you're better at it if you're confident. So the question is, where does your confidence begin? Is it a chicken or egg? And of course, confidence can come from competence, from being good at it, from just understanding exactly what needs to be done. But it's not enough. It's not enough. Competence isn't enough. You really do need to have some kind of internal framework as well. And getting a grip on all this often comes from making it unscary. You know, the more mm-hmm. you know about something, the less frightening it is, the more you feel confident to do it. So if something looks really frightening and then somebody comes in and explains all the physics to you, how it works and how there's no way you're going to get hurt, because we need this, we got that, that will increase your sense of confidence and well-being in doing it, and you're more likely to do a better job than if you think, oh crap, if I do this, I'm going to lose my life or my leg's going to be cut off. So being well-informed in something gives you more confidence. And this is, you know, this is especially true of sex. And I think that what happens is, for most people, is they learn sex in all the wrong places. And it's become considerably worse. Men today, young men today, are at an extreme disadvantage over older guys, because they grew up with their first sexual experience being the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were to ask somebody today about their earliest sexual experience, a guy who was in his 20s, and the first time that he had, maybe the first time he masturbated, chances are he was looking at something at the time, and, you know, probably pornography. And mm-hmm. he's going to do that again and again and again for maybe a couple of years before he ever has an encounter with a flesh and blood woman and he's in bed with her. And by then, he's imprinted himself in this really weird way. If you were to ask a guy in his 50s what his first sexual experience is, he was probably touching himself before or without pornography. And many times it was kind of happening in his head, and he was not necessarily just creating a visual image in his head. He was imagining the way she would feel, the way her breath would feel on the side of his face, the way she would smell. He may be much more preoccupied by what her skin feels like than what she looks like. In fact, he may imagine that the whole thing is happening in the dark and that he can't see her at all. He may have no visual whatsoever as he's having this fantasy and as he's, you know, coming alive sexually. By the time that he meets a woman, he doesn't have this sense of, I need to watch this to get off on it. So when men who grew up on pornography end up in bed with a woman, in their mind, they have all this wiring that arousal is linked to being able to watch. Well, they can't watch it because, well, they could, but, you know, they'd have to set up a mirror or a video camera, right, and then watch the monitor. And then they're like, ah, this is what sex looks like.
This is it, yeah.
This is it, right? But they don't get that that's not at all what sex is. Sex is in this interaction. It's in the smell of each other, the touch of each other. When you press against her hand, she presses back. The eye contact, the stuff that goes on between you, that's really what sex is. It's not in, out, in, out. I mean, that's a little piece of it. But when your arousal and your whole thing is kind of based on just the physical portion of it and just the what it looks like, you lose everything that makes a man a great lover.
Mm-hmm.
You lose it all.
Right. You know what's funny is it just reminded me of something that just from talking to a lot of people. And you know what's funny is I say this a lot, but you know, in order to get ahead in the world, in most instances, you don't have to be that much better than the last guy. You just have to be a little better because better is still better. It's kind of like the old joke where, you know, if two guys are standing beside each other and all of a sudden a bear chases them and, you know, it's more or less, how does it go where the bear starts chasing them, the guy looks at him and says, you think this bear can outrun us or whatever? He says, doesn't matter if the bear can outrun us, I just have to be able to outrun you. You know what I mean? And it's kind of that same mentality when it comes to different stuff. But even sex, like I say, just talking to different women and things like that, on a fundamental level, I guess just getting a little bit better at it is going to make magnitudes of difference, because in reality, most dudes suck at it.
Oh my God. That is an understatement. You got to feel bad for women. There are so few men who have even the vaguest competency in terms of being good lovers, and they don't even know how to begin, where to start. And maybe they'll end up reading some article in, you know, Maxim or Cosmo or something, you know, the foolproof technique. And, you know, techniques are fine, but we all know them. We all read the same article in Maxim. So, you know, it's not like, I mean, and it's good. I'm not saying it's not good. I mean, you can't fix a car without a screwdriver. You know what I mean? But if you leave a screwdriver in a car alone in a room, that car ain't going to get fixed. You need to know
what
to do with that damn thing, you know?
Yeah.
So having a screwdriver is fine. And it's good to understand, you know, where the G-spot is and all that. And, you know, it's important. And those techniques, you know, they count for something. Not going to say that they don't. But most men are abysmal. I mean, they're just, and they don't even understand how much pleasure they're denying themselves. I mean, a lot of men feel like, well, if I get to the orgasm, then that was pretty good. And yeah, orgasms are great. They feel fantastic. But there's so much more. And it's very surprising to men who are like, who believe that their orgasm is such a powerful experience. They have no idea that they're probably experiencing 10% of how powerful it could be, the orgasm itself, and how much more sexual pleasure that they're capable of overall. It's just an enormous, enormous range that most people only scratch the surface of. And for women, this is 10 times as true. The orgasm for women is by no means the best part of sex.
Right.
By no means. It's not even close.
Mm-hmm.
And so a guy feels like, well, you know, she came, so, and she probably faked it.
yeah, what about that? That's...
well, 7 out of 10 women, right? So
yeah. I don't even know the stats. I mean, this is your thing, and I don't know anything about it, but that's
7 out of 10.
Yeah,
and I'd argue that it's higher for in terms of women who fake it sometimes versus everyone, right?
Right.
So there is this sensibility out there that, you know, she had an orgasm, so I did okay. But yeah, most men are terrible, terrible lovers. And the bar is set very, very low to be the best lover she's ever had in her life. The bar is set very low. But I would argue, and what I push for, I mean, the guys who get my newsletter, I'm really not interested. You know, I'll sell it that way. I'll sell it. I'll say, you know, be the best lover she's ever had. You know, that's going to be fantastic. And make her forget every man she's ever been with before you. And appeals to guys' egos, and they're like, yeah, I'm going to buy this dude's book. But there's a much bigger picture, which is not just to be the best lover she's ever had, but to completely rewrite her idea of what was even possible sexually, to bring her to a place that she never even imagined existed. And strangely, it's easy. There's so little that really needs to be done and learned to be the guy who brings her into a new world of sexual possibility and makes her go, wow, I thought I had good sex before. I had no idea what the truth of what was possible was.
Yeah. You know, that's really interesting you said that, because it's so funny. I love having these conversations because they always just remind me of different things in other areas of life that kind of tie into it. And I remember, way back in the day when I was in sales and stuff like that, and getting training, and the guy doing the training would always say, he would say, look, just because you make the sale doesn't mean the sale ends there. And actually, making the sale is just the beginning of everything else. And I think sex is a lot of the same way for guys. Well, it's like, okay, here it is. I'm going to put it in, and ta-da, victory. Whereas, that's just like the start of going up the mountain. That's not the finale. That's like, that's just the start of something that could be even better. So,
a couple of things, just to get a little specific here, because I feel like I was just really vague in
sure.
saying all that. I just kind of lay down some track here, because I'm in total agreement with you. And it occurs to me that men should get some real possibility of what's out there. First of all, generally, what a man finds most exciting in a woman when you're in bed, and what makes a woman a great lover, and a lot of men would say, she gives great blowjobs, or she's very attractive, a beautiful woman. Obviously, that counts. He might say something like, she's willing to do a lot of wild stuff. I want to do like a lot of crazy stuff and kinky stuff. And so if she's into that, that's going to be good for me. And of course, I think the most universal thing is that a woman's great in bed when she's enjoying. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, if a woman just lays there, and I guess if she's hot enough, it could be okay. But generally, we want her to be screaming and, like an eel twisting around going, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's good for us. We want that evidence. We want to see that she's just into it, that she's digging it. She's just so excited, and she's so wet, and she's just screaming and eyes rolling back in her head. She's having orgasm after orgasm, face is turning bright red. That's what we're really wired to find as good in bed. So, if you just kind of flip the camera around 360 now and figure out, well, what does a woman think is good in bed? Well, a lot of times, by the way, women don't even know what they think is good in bed because they've never experienced it. They just don't know what they don't know. So it's a lot of the same stuff. So, one of the first things would be, if the guy is really attractive, that's going to make a difference. But women are attracted to different things than men. Now, of course, your Adonis index ain't going to hurt.
It's
going to hurt. It really won't. But if you were to ask a woman what's most attractive in a man, she'd say confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're approaching sex with this calm, sure confidence that you know exactly what you're going to do to drive her crazy, even if you're faking it, by the way, that's going to improve things for her. So, it's just the same exact thing. If she's attractive, that helps. Attractive helps, right? And then, are you into a lot of the stuff that she's into? Well, as a man, you need to lead that. Are you willing to articulate the things that you want to do without being tentative or, oh, I'm sorry, would it be okay if I, I was thinking this might be kind of hot, but not if you're not into it,
Mm-hmm.
If you're that guy, that's not fun for her. What's fun for her is a guy who is into it. He enjoys sex, he's comfortable with it. So, we're just seeing that these are all the same things. And then, that final thing, the thing that I think is the biggest thing for men, which she's really digging, well, it's the same for women. And most men, the vast majority of men, are completely silent in bed.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make any sound at all. And if you've ever been with a woman that makes no sound at all, that's not a lot of fun. Well, it's not fun for her either.
Hmm.
And the reason that we're silent is because we're scared. It might be humiliating to make a lot of noise. It wouldn't be, you know, manly. What if that's weird and she laughs, you know?
Right.
We're so caught up in the drama of our own weird little stuff. Or we're so caught up in the fantasy in our head that has nothing to do with what's even going on in the room.
Oh, see, that's way different too.
Oof. Yeah, so we're not engaged in it. We're not getting lost in this moment. And so she wants to see all the same things. She wants to see you that excited. Now, there's a number of reasons why a man's not going to do that. One, like I said, is this idea that he's embarrassed. It's humiliating. He doesn't have the confidence in himself, the self-trust to just let himself go wild, which would drive her crazy, by the way. The second reason is because a lot of times men are really trying hard not to ejaculate. They're trying to make it last a little longer. And to let themselves get that excited is to call it over.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So learning the skills of having non-ejaculatory orgasms so that, like your woman, you can have orgasm after orgasm and not worry about ejaculating, that's kind of a next level thing also, because now she fully gets to feel and experience your passion. And you know, most guys, if you take excitement on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is you're ejaculating, most guys like to hang out around 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to get down as far as 5 because now their erection's going to start going limp. So that's not cool.
Right.
So they're spending all this mental energy trying to keep themselves right at that 7 place. So they can kind of, you know, the penis stays hard, but I'm not coming, you know?
Yeah.
But the possibility exists for them to live at 9.9 and just be in that total moment through the entire thing. And that, you know, it requires a little bit of practice, but anyone
sure.
can do it. Anyone can do it.
That's really interesting. I never really thought about the fact of how much energy was being expelled just trying to keep yourself, you know, keep yourself at a point so you could go longer. But in doing so, you're actually just totally killing everything because you're wasting all that energy leakage going somewhere else that could be, you know, really lasered in and focused on what you're doing. That's really interesting, man.
Yeah, and then, you know, guys are also doing what they think works because they read it in an article or because it worked on the last girl. So they'll be, you know, fucking her like a jackrabbit, bah, 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 thinking, you know, that's what's really, she's almost there, I just got to go harder and faster.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible that the way she's wired or based on the emotional place she is right now, going as slowly as the minute hand of a clock is what would get her off. But
mm-hmm.
he just doesn't know. He just doesn't know because he's not in it. He's not in the moment with her. He's not even in the room. He's in his head thinking, oh, if I do this, she'll come. Or if I do that, she'll come. You know, there's a boxing analogy that I like to use because I used to be a boxing instructor. And there's a famous quote from, I think it was Jack Dempsey. I've lost it now. Where he says, you know, through that whole fight, he was thinking about how he was going to beat me. And while he was thinking that, I beat him.
Right.
I was hitting him while he was thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to... And anybody who's had some experience with boxing knows that you spend a lot of time learning all these techniques and practicing them and practicing and practicing until you don't have to think about them.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't think, well, I'm gonna feint left, dip right, and then hit him with a hook. If you're thinking that, you're getting killed.
Yeah.
It's fine on focus, man. You get killed in the ring. You can't
yeah.
think. There's no time to think. You just have to be right there in the moment. And if you practice that little faint left, dip right, and hit him with the right hook 100 times, then when the opening comes for that, it just flies out of you.
Yep.
So when a guy is sitting there in bed, most of the time he's either thinking all these, you know, kind of insecure thoughts like, oh, you know, well, I wonder if she thinks my penis is big enough, or is that weird and around? Is she liking this? Like, is she faking it? Is she just not liking it?
Mm-hmm.
She's quiet. Is she not coming? Is she coming?
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of in his head, or he's going through all this other stuff of, you know, I'm going to do this to her, then I'm going to do that to her. Or he's totally out of it, and he's either thinking about something exciting that he saw in pornography in order to maintain his erection, or he's thinking about, you know, a baseball game or talking to his boss at work in order to not ejaculate. So he's
yeah.
like, all the stuff going on in his head, but none of it has to do with really making that connection, feeling where she's at, and, you know, riding her like a great surfer rides a wave. And just really like feeling that, oh yeah, she's digging this. I'm just going to push into there and I'm just going to smell her and soak this in. Wow, that's fantastic. And just, you know, being right there with her.
Mm-hmm.
That, that will create an experience for her that no other man has ever come close to giving her, because not one in 500 men live in that space in the bedroom.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. You can ask a lot of women. I mean, there are a lot of women that, I mean, pushing up in 30s, some of you in 40s that have never had an orgasm before from a man. Now they can do it themselves. They can.
Women can't do it themselves. But yes. Yeah.
I mean, yes. That's odd to me. That's always kind of blown my mind. Because I don't know, man. I don't know. It some of it just doesn't seem very hard. Like a guy was asking me something about sex one time on my blog. He sent me an email because I think I wrote a blog post or something like that. And I was like, yeah, you know, here's the deal. Do this. I mean, not going through the whole, like, mapping out a whole sex thing, but, you know, basically saying, you know, but once you get to have sex with her, then basically just blow her freaking mind. You do whatever you need to do to make it so you just blow her mind, because I guarantee you nobody else is doing it. And, it's just the weirdest thing that, some women just don't have that, and guys just aren't paying attention. And the guy was asking me, he goes, well, how do I do that? I said, man, it's the easiest thing in the world.
Read my newsletter.
But it's not even that. It's even easier than that, man. It's you just listen, you know? And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, I don't know if this is a big secret or anything, but, you know, I just kind of do some stuff. And then when I hear certain things that kind of sound like it sounds good, well, I just kind of keep doing that. Yeah, but the funny thing is that, you know, most guys have this certain, like you were saying, this certain way of doing things that they do every time, and it's like a play that happens every time, and it has to go in this certain direction that they totally just miss out on what could possibly be good. I guess I don't know. So you know more about that stuff than I do, but
you're right on. I mean, that's exactly right. I think that's kind of the main theme of my first book, Revolutionary Sex. Whole book really focuses in on that point. And then I give, you know, certain techniques and drills and exercises and explain it 9 different ways until I can really connect it in somebody's head. But yeah, that's it. Listen. I say pay attention. Because you're not just listening with your ears, you're listening with your smell, you're listening with your fingertips, you're listening with your eyes, you're listening with your tongue, you're listening with every sense you have. That total tune in. And when she feels that, there's 2 things that happen. One is, of course, it drives you home. You figure out exactly what it is she wants. You're engaged in the dance with her. You know, oh, that's what works. She likes it this deep, and she likes it with this rhythm. Mm-hmm. But also, you're enjoying that. You're soaking her in. You're getting that pleasure too. You're absorbing all this, you know, fantastic stuff that's going on. And when she feels that, when she feels you taking pleasure from her, that's such a huge turn on for her that at that point orgasm becomes inevitable. And I've had, and it sounds like, that doesn't sound like it would work. And yet, I haven't counted them recently, but I'd say probably over 500. I could be pushing 1,000 by now. Definitely over 500 emails from men who said, yeah, you know, I was with this girl. She'd never had an orgasm before. Or we had been together for 9 years. She never had an orgasm. And then, all of a sudden, you know, tried this, and she had her first orgasm. And it was simple. It wasn't even a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like a certain amount of curiosity that people miss out on. You know, it's like that whole, you know, it's almost like Christmas. You know, maybe it's just the way I kind of thought about this over the years, but it's like Christmas, where it's like there's this present sitting there, and I wonder what's inside, but there's like a certain combination that, it's maybe like a safe. There's a certain combination that works, and I got to figure out what the combination is. But I know it's not the same combination that was for the last safe. You know, it's different. It's a different one, and I got to, you know, put my ear to it and kind of figure out what it is. But it's fun at the same time, because I don't know. Like I say, it's for me, it's always been this kind of a curious thing.
It's a beautiful way of looking at it. That's a beautiful attitude to take towards it. And a lot of men, again, they're insecure about this idea of being curious, because it almost sounds like, if I'm curious, I don't know. And if I don't know, then I have to feel insecure about that. And then, of course, No, honor that curiosity. That's a great place to be. That's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah.
That's the thrill of life.
Yeah, this is something that I guess mindset-wise, and because just like we've talked about, most guys suck. I mean, most guys are abysmal in the sack. I mean, I've heard it time and time again from people, or from women, excuse me, and I'm sure you have. So you now know this. This isn't like conjecture. You know this is pretty much as fact can be. So how would you feel talking to any woman? Now, this totally takes, if you don't have a woman right now, and you're out dating and things like that and trying to find somebody that's good for you, or maybe you're scared to go approach somebody. But internally, how would you feel knowing that the woman you're getting ready to walk up to, that there's a damn good possibility that if something happens, you're gonna just light her life up, just blow her brains out, for lack of a better term, in a way that's never happened. I mean, I don't know about you, but I think I would have this shitty grin on my face. You know what I mean?
Well, it definitely aids the confidence. No doubt about that. Yeah.
I mean, so all this other stuff. I mean, if you're kind of sitting there and you're going, man, I don't know or whatever, but then you start getting that curiosity and these things start happening and it just goes. Another thing I heard one time, and this kind of aids in the confidence too, but I've had this said to me, and I don't know if there's some I haven't looked into any research in it, but it's almost like some women or maybe all women can actually feel or actually can tell when a guy is quote unquote highly sexed. So basically, she knows without you saying it if you're getting any or not. So
I think the English refer to that as poon dust. And, it's not just the getting any. It's, just to speak to that confidence point a little bit, because it's kind of it's an important detail in terms of intention. Anytime you walk into a situation, your intention counts. So if somebody comes to you and they're proposing a business deal because what they want to do is, get some money out of you, it's very different than when somebody comes and says, I have a way that the two of us can each double our businesses and grow together by doing this and, Mm-hmm. Like you get it when there's some of your best interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of the reason that a lot of men feel very anxious when they approach a woman is because they're going to ask her for something. They want something from her. Mm-hmm. She's attractive and they want to fuck her. I mean, that's, I want to, I'll trade you dinner for fucking or, they don't have it composed in their mind that they're bringing something that would make her fundamentally very glad that you've approached.
Mm-hmm.
You make her feel good. They have this sense of, if she knew I was a good guy, then, she would talk to me, but I gotta go up and I gotta show her and prove to her I'm a good guy so that she'll spread her legs for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting that.
And then regret that she ever did so, by the way.
That's
the second part.
Yeah. There's this sensibility going in of knowing that she wants the kind of sex you're bringing. She wants it,
Yeah.
She's dying. She's been starved for it. And when you show up, you are the island to a drowning person,
Yep. And then, you get, that's how you become stalked, my friend. that's how you become stalked.
That is the downside. That does happen.
I can attest to that.
It's hard to break up with a girl at that point.
Yeah, it's so funny because
it's not really funny.
No. But yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you've got kind of two sides. You've got the whole where you're going to try to convince her to give you something, or you're coming to the table knowing that you're going to give her something that is. And when I'm talking about herpes. instead of her waking up the next morning going, why did I do that? I'm so stupid. Going, I don't know why I did that, but holy shit. Totally different. And, I don't know. I mean, I think you've said it best, man. When you get this side of it handled, there is a lot on a fundamental basis that, just as far as your life in general, I mean, just an entire fundamental shift happens. I mean, confidence-wise, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. Like I say, you probably know better than me just because this is your area, but there's this fundamental shift that happens when you know that this is what's going on, and this is how it's going down, I guess you could say. Things just happen, just across the board.
Yeah, it's a big leverage point in your life. It really makes you feel like you have something important handled, and it allows you to bring more confidence and a more relaxed competency to the rest of your life.
Yeah, and it's a big deal. I think it's a bigger deal than most guys give context to. And
also, if you're looking for happiness, mm-hmm. I think in the end, you know, we all want a life that is enjoyable, that's pleasurable to some degree, that's happy.
Mm-hmm.
And whether we want it to be this way or not, sex is a big piece of that. It's a big piece of that. I mean, men don't buy Ferraris to drive fast. They buy Ferraris to get women. Mm-hmm. And they want women because they feel like their happiness is somehow bound up in that. And to some extent, it is. You know, and when you ultimately get to the point where you say, okay, I'm throwing in with this woman, if you get to that point in your life, you say, you know, I'm down to ride with this one. She and I are, you know, we're going to get old together. We're going to stay together. Understanding how to, you know, keep that physical pleasure and keep that satisfaction sexually in the mix is a big, you know, 50 years later, what was your life like and how much fun did you have and how satisfied are you and how good do you feel about it? It has a lot to do with your ability to sexually connect with another human being and not mm-hmm. with a machine.
Yeah, it's, like I say, it's a big deal. So how do you do this? We're going to end off on this because I think we got to figure out a way for these guys to go on your newsletter or something, get some good stuff. But one of the problems that I have, just in general, like I say, I've talked with a bunch of people. When you're talking on this level and you're talking about this veil that's lifted, and there's another side that everybody's, that, you know, 99.8% of all men are missing out on. You know, how do you convey that this is actually, there's a reality there, and this is truthful, this is factual, there's this reality that you're just not living in? I mean, how do you, like I say, I talked to Brent Smith about some of this stuff a while back, just as far as social game and stuff, and how do you show somebody that this is how it is, or how do you, you know, I guess because their beliefs are not even anywhere near that, and it sounds so far-fetched, how do you bridge that gap?
Well, I think that the way that, the soap companies do it is probably best. You give them, you know, a free sample. I mean, that's why we have newsletters and stuff like that. I mean, if you try something and it has good results in your life, then you come back and you get some more. I mean, this is really a question of marketing. And I guess that's kind of my marketing strategy. And, you know, marketing is good. I enjoy that.
Right.
It's not my area of great expertise, but it just, yeah, I think that's the best way to do it. I think that's why I've been putting out that free newsletter. And, you know, frankly, I guess, you know, testimonials, people write in letters and say, fundamentally changed my life. Couples write in, you know, we've been married this many years. I mean, I'm, you know, not, I guess the only way to really give somebody what you have to give and to make their lives a better place, I really, you know, fundamentally believe that what I have to share with men changes their lives for the better. I mean, I know it does.
Mm-hmm.
And so fundamentally then you have to say, well, how am I going to get them to get this? Well, most of the men, I would say, who arrive into my world and subscribe to my list, start buying my programs and stuff, most of them arrived because they knew there was something wrong.
Right.
You know, they arrived because they either had problems with ejaculation control, or because they were dating a woman who's never had an orgasm, or they're dating a woman who they can't give an orgasm, or they know there's something missing, they feel a lack of confidence. They're generally coming at it from that angle, and a lot of others are, you know, these kind of open-minded guys that are like, sex is good, I'd like to make it better. But, you know, they kind of find me and not the other way around. So there's not that much convincing that has to go on. And then, you know, they read my stuff and it resonates with them. Not every teacher is right for every man.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they resonate with it. And I think that, they get a lot out of it. And for me, of course, you know, this is how I put bread on my table. So, you know, I sell this stuff. And I feel fantastic to have the privilege of making my living by improving other people's lives and not, you know, just selling them something that's not good for them. So that's a good feeling as far as that goes for me. And I would say, I mean, you know, it's interesting. When I first started doing this, it was a huge cut in my income from what I was doing before. But I was getting these emails from guys telling me about how it changed their lives. And that was worth more than the money. And it still is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's, yeah, and the question of how to convince people, I guess, you know, you put up the testimonial letters and you lead with the Doritos, as our friend Evan says, who's my marketing mentor and all this. Mm-hmm. You lead with the Doritos, not with the broccoli. I mean, you know, you got to give guys the broccoli, and my book is full of the broccoli that really does help you. But I lead with the Doritos, you know. I tell people about, you know, some great trick for getting their G-spot that's going to make her scream, and that stuff's important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I lead with that stuff. But I guess that's how, you know.
There you go. Yeah, that was kind of the context of it that the guys need to know. I mean, that's why reason we give out free stuff, because in my book, the best testimonial is a self-testimonial. And if it works for you, I mean, it doesn't matter what other people say. It matters if it works for you. That's why we, all of us have good newsletters and stuff like that. So, what's the site? Is it just revolutionarysex.com?
Yeah, revolutionarysex.com will get you the free newsletter. It's also the name of my book.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to revolutionarysex.com, leave me your email. There's a report that you get with the most common mistakes that men are making right now. Mm-hmm. That they think they're doing the right thing, but it's actually just pissing women off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's worth getting. And then you're also subscribed to the free email. And if you're into this deeper change your life around stuff, the website for that is lifelovepassion.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's more of a big picture, leading a more passionate life and unlocking the cage you've put yourself in. Mm-hmm. That's that stuff. And then I also have kind of a sub-list. If you're specifically for men who are interested in learning how to have non-ejaculatory orgasms, which is, you know, if you've ever had issues with lasting longer in bed, this is actually the key. Distracting yourself and all these other things that are out there are all well and good, but you're enjoying the sex less when you do that. So right. Learning how to have non-ejaculatory orgasms is the way to vent that steam of sexual excitement without ejaculating, while at the same time being totally engaged and fully enjoying it. So it's just a little training program. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes about a month, and I kind of lay that out. And that's at ejaculationdomination.com.
Nice. That's cool, man. I got a quick story I'm going to lay on these guys. I just thought about it that I think you relate to, and then we'll close it out. But, we had a party at the house the other day, and the owners of my girlfriend's company actually came over to the house and they were talking, and one of the guys looks at I'm talking to him or whatever, and we're talking business and stuff and sales and marketing. And he kind of looks at me after a couple of drinks, and he's like, you know, have you noticed a difference in her since she started with us? And I was like, well, what do you mean? And he was like, well, she seems to have kind of come out of her shell and stuff like that. And I was like, no, not really. I mean, so I know she's happy and things like that. He goes, man, she's at work. She's just, you know, people are coming in and she's touring these people around and, you know, we're closing deals and stuff like that. And I just think she's changing, you know, for the better and things like that. And I was like, dude, I said, I think you're missing the boat on what's really happening. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, it's easy to tell people you're the best when you're the best. And it's easy to be confident and talk to that on that level, to talk to people on that level and have that confidence when you know that you're the best in what you do. And I said, I told him, I said, what you guys are doing right now, and you're doing a good job of doing, is that you are the best right now at what you do. And she knows that. It's very easy for her to tell people that. And his eyes just kind of rolled back. He gives you think. I said, oh man, yeah, easily. She's got confidence knowing. She doesn't have to sell anything. It's just matter of fact. It's factual. We're the best. here's what it is. There's this confidence level knowing that, and that's how it is. And, you know, from a fundamental standpoint, just from the stuff that you've been saying, Alex, from a confidence standpoint, when you know you're the best and you've got something to bring to the table, it's different, man. It's different. You don't have to change.
I'm tipping my hat and bowing.
Yeah. You don't have to change you when you know that, you know what I'm saying? When you know you're the best. There's just a confidence that naturally comes. And nothing that changes about you. It's just a matter of fact here. So.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Well, cool. I really appreciate it. We got into a lot of cool stuff. We're definitely going to have to dig into a lot more stuff in another interview, another podcast, because I got a feeling a lot of guys are going to have some questions that we're going to need to answer. So I would love to ask you more questions if you would love it.
I would enjoy that.
Cool, man. Well, Alex, I really appreciate you being here, guys. If you like some of the stuff, make sure you go to revolutionarysex.com. You can get the other stuff from there, but that's a good area to start. And like I say, every Friday we got more lifestyle stuff like this. We will catch you later.
Thanks, Brett.
No problem, though.